Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run. This time of the day, your drive time show with Helmut and Dwight, just on Eagle FM.
And obviously, guys, welcoming you to what is a superbly disastrously cold Tuesday.
Wednesday, not Tuesday. It's a why am I stuck on Tuesday? It's halfway through the week.
Why do you want to reverse the week? Some of us are looking forward to to Friday.
And that's good, Helmut. That's good. I'm also looking forward to Friday, you know. And laundry day as well, you know.
Oh, dear Lord.
Realized I...
Yeah, when you look at it that way, it sounds very bleak.
Yeah, you know, more work coming from work. Ish. Going to work, coming back to work. Yeah, for those people making fun of adults, yeah, this is what awaits you.
Yeah, someone...
Above 25.
Someone made a joke that, well, what if we... We all live at work, but then we just, you know, we occasionally have to come home to change our clothes and grab something to eat and then go back to work.
Do you know who actually lives like that?
Yeah, who's that?
A lot of people in Asia.
What?
A lot of people in Asia. I saw one of the earliest, there was an old...
Wait, that's not a joke?
No, it's not a joke. In Asia, the situation was developed like that. Or you've got the madhouse town planning that took place in places like Brazil.
Yeah.
Helmut, I thought a favela was just unique.
Another version of like the Brazilian version of Tura?
Yeah. But not, okay, to
the
say,
informal settlement.
To say Tura,
yeah.
Because Tura is still formalized in terms of town planning, layout. Let me not say town planning.
So you're telling me it's not even planned?
Who?
The favelas.
The favelas, go look at those things, bruh.
You're just seeing sharks that are more like climbing up the mountains. I mean, it's a whole ecosystem going on there.
Or it's more like people were told, you know what, we'll build you as cheap as possible, housing.
Mm-hmm.
So cheap that in some cases it looks like you just have one living area, like you would see sometimes in a, you know, like what many shacks have been constructed, for example, in Namibia.
Yeah.
It's like one living area. Ablution facilities is just a separate room facility scenario, and it's not even to say that you do have electricity and water access.
And then from there?
Just a hop, skip, and a jump away, just a street away, you find the city formal in that scenario. But yeah, guys, let us not start off on that particular negative note of...
We have our own negativity.
Depression. Yeah, but actually, you know, we're coming into a very poetic... talking point.
Mm-hmm.
For today, I told Helmut I will behave myself because it's his home region. It's Kavango East.
State of the region address. We're still on that.
We're still on that. Because we're now going to focus on what was different in each region so we can understand fully the scope, the scale of how big each region's needs were. I realize now, Helmut.
Yeah.
If you looked at how big the needs for Kunene was. And then you and I realized at the end of the talk when you showed the map of the size of Kunene.
That's when we realized, oh.
Kunene, technically, there was a specific reason why they almost had 2 hours of feedback from their governor. I only made it through the first hour, guys. Because I was just like, we were still stuck on health. And I was like, where now are we getting to the other sectors? We're just stuck on health. But yeah, and it seems like Helmut, you can see the picture changing from the three regions we started from so far, because Kavango East is today. The three regions we've done so far, there has been a changing picture in terms of needs. The need might be the same. For example, they all started with health.
Yeah.
They all started with education, meaning human capital investment, human capital development sectors.
It all starts from there.
It all starts from there.
Yeah.
But when you look at within each sector, the needs are different. The needs that were completed, the ones that were obviously, you know, all of the governors so far have been giving what happened in 2024's financial year and what you can look forward to from that springboard, meaning from that foundation you're building forward.
Yeah.
And each one of them had a unique particular need function arising in the health sector, in the education sector, in the infrastructure development sector, in the agricultural sector even. Because Kunene's discussion yesterday was, that they've got almost no presence of crop cultivation. But here, the Kavango East region, the Kavango East governor was highlighting, hey, if we talk about agriculture, it's just, you know, we do minimal fix a few things or minimal, correction on animal husbandry.
Yeah.
But then empowerment and resilience project coordination around crop cultivation.
Yeah.
For example, your hometown's, you know, private sector investment. We won't mention it now, guys. We won't mention it. It's not to say that Helmut, did you see any of that investment? The 1.5 billion for blueberries. I know we wrote about it in the Villager.
There's one buddy of mine who told me that, I think that was, earlier this year, somewhere around January, February then.
Yeah.
That, he was applying for a job there. And then he told me that I think, he was put on a contractual basis, but I haven't spoken to him since whether he's still there or the contract expired and stuff, but he did tell me about it.
Yeah. So yeah. It's actually good, yeah.
It's a very good initiative. But the aspect of agriculture that sort of like made me sort of like start become very negative towards the way that we ordinary people on the ground makes it, you know, things very difficult for the, you know, things very difficult for the government is that the quarantine discussion that investment, because there were also money that was allocated to building of quarantines, which will enable local farmers, that is, now we're talking about animal husbandry, to sort of like meet the standards of Meatco in terms of the products that they will supply.
Mm.
Yeah. Now here's the thing though. Those facilities, if you just, one that I know for sure, that's, the parts of, Mbapuka, Kangongo, all the way to Mayara. I remember that going looking after cattle, there was always, you have a tied road. Mm. That's just, depending on where you are, could be, five or 10 kilometers from the river.
Yeah.
Now, that's where you find the gravel road. But the tarred road is, it's more 15, 20 kilometers depending, again, on, depending on where you are. And I'm measuring this from, from the river, because a lot of homesteads are concentrated along the riverbanks.
Mm.
Yeah. Now, just across the, what the government did, I think this was in the early 2000s. So they build these quarantine areas, which would enable, it's a quarantine facility, to assist the animal husbandry farmers. So for veterinary health save, more like a health monitoring before these cattle are sold. So they build a series of enclosures on pretty much, if not, more or less on every village.
Mm.
So that for everyone that wants to sell their cattle, they put them in this area for observation to ensure that they are, they meet the health standards of whoever is buying.
Yeah.
The fence of that enclosure was the first thing to disappear.
Why, Helmut?
Hmm?
Why?
Every time we call on radio stations and basically complain about, everyone that's given a tender and they don't finish it. We complain about those things.
Mm.
But, if an infrastructure is built and we vandalize it ourselves, it's kind of difficult to keep relocating money to something that we keep vandalizing and then turn around and complaining. Now, this is something that, again, it's, I think, comes down to, to several things for me. One, that's a personal responsibility.
Mm.
Because, like it was pointed out, at the beginning of the, at the beginning of the discussions, at the beginning of the state of the region address, this was just the series of discussions before, this was before the governor took over. one thing that was pointed out was the communication aspect, yeah. The intergenerational communication aspect. Now, somewhere along the discussion, one joke that was thrown was that, how do people with wide age gaps communicate so that, the leadership transition in terms of the projects, aka the leaders of tomorrow being the youth, when they take over, how do we ensure that, they know what they are doing when they get there? How do we ensure? One example that was used is how do you reach most of the youth? Because most of them are in the more like tech environment, like social media type of environments. Now, traditionally, a way that elders used to impart their knowledge on the youth was something they call the Oshiwambo word for it was mentioned in the in that discussion. I just totally forgot it. Now the Timbukushu word for it is Thikota. Now this is a type of fire that is built separate from the fire that's built for cooking.
Yeah.
Now this is just where it's usually it's usually young people and elders basically sit around the fire. It's the equivalent of what you have television today. Just sit around the fire so that, stories are told, folklore and everything, with the moral of the story at the end. And you have all this information sharing, knowledge imparting in terms of how to grow up as a responsible member of society. Now, because of this gap, now you have this issue of, you have the boomer saying, well, we can't give Gen Z and millennials all this responsibility because they are too irresponsible. Now you have a bunch of embarrassing enough millennials and the boomers going, and Gen Z saying, no, I can't participate in this type of discussions, but because they are boring.
They are busy. They're literally busy criticizing you when you've not even done anything.
So then on the live stream this morning, on the live stream of Namco bail application, someone wrote a comment in that live stream that sent me rolling. That these magistrates in this in this comment section have no clue what's going on in court. And he was right.
I hope it wasn't you.
No, that wasn't me. Thank heavens. this magistrate, I think the word that was used there was this magistrate, these judges have no clue what's going on in court. So, I think the important part of sharing information, the right way is when something goes wrong, you know who to blame.
Yeah.
Now, if something goes wrong, take for example in the Ministry of Finance, and you are blaming James Sankwasa, now you know that clearly something is missing there because he's in urban and rural development.
And he's got nothing to
do with... He has nothing to do with what's going on.
With Ministry of Finance, yeah.
So the information sharing for me, once we get that out of the way and basically develop that sense of responsibility, that once an infrastructure is built, it becomes, this is a public asset. It's there for the benefit of everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now, one of the biggest problem that, that my region had at some point, I think that was countrywide, water pumps being stolen.
It's actually a very good story, Helmut, because, back in last year, we had someone here on air, specifically from the Ministry of Agriculture.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember it was the particular interview I did with the PRO from Agriculture before he went to the Green Hydrogen Program. And he had to also give a particular update in terms of, what happened to some of the particular sort of like pumping gear for those canals happening there in the north.
Yeah.
Specifically for the water supply from the Kalweke a water system in southern Angola.
Yeah.
And it, every time, for example, at that stage, his minister was also Schledwein.
Yeah.
Every time the aspect of human interference, meaning local community interference, in terms of just leaving the infrastructure alone
yeah.
to serve everyone's purpose,
yeah.
is the biggest headache for all.
Now you see the problem.
Remember back in last year, there was the flash flooding that took place in the north.
Yeah.
And then Minister Schletwein came out and said, or former Minister Schletwein came out and said, it was because someone had damaged or taken the early warning systems.
Really?
They had installed early warning systems. If that massive body of water that comes from southern Angola yeah. flows into northern Namibia,
yeah.
someone, people on the ground had actually interfered or damaged or taken with the early warning system. Now, if we are really going to have a flood on the scale of what happened with Spain last year, the city of Valencia. No, not Spain. Yeah. Yeah, Spain last year with the city of Valencia, the port city, where their early warning systems failed. The early warning system failed literally because when the people got the SMSs, the water was already on top of them.
Yeah.
So the SMSs were supposed to come like an hour in advance or stuff like that.
Yeah, like it happened in Hawaii. Was that last week?
Yeah.
Yeah, with the earthquake that triggered a tsunami. The earthquake that took place in Russia that yeah. triggered a tsunami. Yeah.
yeah. Were those people early enough or did they early?
No, they were early. Yeah, they were given I think it was about a day in advance.
Yeah.
They just told that, according to predictions, looking at the size in terms of magnitude of the earthquake, I think it was 8.8.
Move up.
Move into highlands yeah. because that earthquake is going to cause some serious tsunami that will impact you know a large part of Hawaii. So people started moving before the tsunami even arrived.
Yeah. Now, when you look at scenarios like that, just like you said just now,
yeah.
It's public infrastructure meant for all. You yeah. know that it's there. But then there's one wise guy or a bunch of wise guys.
Yeah,
yeah I'll use American, you know, old school Italian, English. There's a wise guy or a bunch of wise guys who think that, oh, since this is for us, the public,
yeah.
let's take it. Let's just go and, you know, asset forfeiture it into our own personal possession. And incidentally, no one saw them.
Yeah, oh yeah. No
one that sees these guys just close to public infrastructure.
No, I didn't see anyone. You see, now that actually is a part of why I think it's very hypocritical, especially, you know, every time that public funds goes missing,
yeah.
we point all the fingers at politicians because why? That was intended for the public. And if it's missing, even before they are, you know, even before they are sent to trial, we want their properties to be confiscated. Like that's how much that's how much anger we develop. But, what's the difference between between someone who is said, you know, who is misusing public funds in public office and you who is stealing public property for your own personal gain?
That was bought with public funds.
With public funds, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah.
In other words, if you were given public funds, you would be stealing it. But what we do is we steal a public tape and then sell it and then connect to Superaware to call on radio to complain about corruption. Now, what we don't know is we are not very different.
I think we're the one that took the tape and put it on our aunt or our grandmother's, you know, day in backyard garden
yeah.
because we wanted a tape.
We wanted it for our own.
Yeah, but we didn't want to go to the local hardware store that's there in the vicinity. No, we want for our particular scenario. It's like, Hamoud, do you know? Okay, I know the story I'm going to tell you now that also, you know, factors into this discussion is a completely opposite of what we're now talking.
Yeah.
So, I know someone that is from, there's a communal area just outside Karasburg. So it's as you're going eastwards to the South Africa border with Namibia. That's not on your way to Upington, the city of Upington, or the town of Upington in South Africa. Now, she explained that like 2 years back, the woman that I know, she explained that 2 years back, there was a local small-scale farmer in the vicinity of right next to their communal area. The communal area's name is Sadco, just for reference. And this small-scale farmer is someone that they personally know. And the guy realized that they have a water pumping issue when it comes to their local borehole in the communal area. So he bought two solar powered pumps, one for him and his farm, his small scale farm, and one for them. But the second one, the second pump technically was meant as a backup for if the first one technically breaks on his farm. And he installed it on their water pump, you know, to pump the water for them. And then lo and behold, the pump that he was using on the farm had broken down. And he came to the community. He's a guy of the community and he explained to them very nicely, guys, I'm going to repossess back what I, you know,
what I gave you,
what I donated to you. I'm really sorry for this, but I have to do this because I don't want to buy another pump.
Yeah.
And then he did that, uninstalled and took it. And then, you know, for a short window of time, the people of SADCO had, you know, decent technology helping them with pumping water that actually, you know, slightly automated to an extent, but you know, it runs on some form of renewable energy. And then they had to come back to literally waiting on the wind to be pumping the water. Now, I know I'm showing you two different scenarios, but at least in this scenario, the guy, it was a negotiation process and a compromise process between people of the local community, even of the same ethnicity.
Yeah.
Now, I understand such beautiful instances of community members negotiating with each other. No need for the police. No need for a governor to get onto national
TV. Yeah, just be adults.
National TV. And then out there telling, probably potentially telling people, you guys must stop stealing stuff, but we don't know who it is. Incidentally, no one wants to tell the police who took it. Hanagam, there's someone just there, close by, right next door to where the thing was taken, who's enjoying lovely pumped water from in his or her backyard garden.
So you took something that was intended for the public so that you can, just you can benefit from it.
And that is the epitome.
But you hate corruption.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
You hate corruption?
Nope, it doesn't.
Or we sometimes have like the conflicting reports of, on the one side, the Minister of Agriculture would say, no, the green schemes are working. And then the minister would, you know, sort of like label off the various green schemes that he or she would be citing. I'm now talking about in general, guys, not specifically to any specific statement, meaning I'm just making a generalization. And then we've got Namibians that would call in here to Eagle FM saying, yeah, we would like to counter that reality that nothing has been happening for 6 or 7 months. And then you go find out on the ground, it's the guys that are on the other end of the same green scheme. Hanakam, this side of the green scheme had been producing something. The end where they are,
side,
their green,
nothing is happening.
Their side has been happening with nothing. Do you see the realities we're sitting here?
Yep.
I know, guys, we went off on a tangent now. But, well, that's what we do all the time, you know?
Yeah. Now, look, for me, I think if we're... while we're on this whole, tangent of agriculture, agriculture is one of those initiatives that would be very good for the Tukavangos because they have a large body of water.
Yeah.
Yeah, because now, there's a very big irony that comes with that. Again, that was also addressed way at the beginning, before we get to the Jacob Zuma part, way at the beginning of the discussion.
Don't start.
I
know it was the whole speech through. It was Jacob Zuma.
There was a lot of just Jacob Zuma. Yeah. Now, look, one thing that was pointed out just as early as possible was the aspect of there were a few things. One was information sharing, which is especially among different age groups. But we started picking that up from the State of the Region address coming out of Mahake. Yeah. Now. When you look at it from an agriculture standpoint, it's one of those things that takes me back to our Albania discussion. Mm. We look at every region. What resources does it have that we can exploit to our advantage? Now, there's the Kavango, the Zambezi, and the Kunene to some degree, if I'm not mistaken. The two Kavangos and Kunene, they have what? They have, they have the, the rivers.
Mm.
So which we can exploit to our advantage in terms of agricultural practice. But when you look at Kavango East, on the other hand, now one thing that was pointed out was water.
Yeah.
Water. A region that's right next to the river is struggling with water. We'll come back with the numbers of water bills coming out. NamWater.
It's time to win your share of 500,000 Namibian dollars in prizes for Windhoek Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Windhoek Beer, SMS the underliner code to 75050, or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So, spot a quote, grab a Windhoek Beer, and you could win. Windhoek, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Welcome back. The time is just a minute past the hour of 5. You just tuned in. You're listening to Home Run with Helmed and Dwight on Eagle FM. And before we continue, let's take a live read. This is a ShopRite live read. Get the hottest deals on all your spirit needs this winter at your favorite ShopRite liquor shop. Get 4 200 ml Grants Triple Wood blended Scotch whiskey for just 200 Namibian dollars. Scottish Collie Whiskey for 174 Namibian dollars and 99 cents each, and 154 Namibian dollars and 99 cents each for Smirnoff 1818 Vodka and Rock Bay Spiced Rum. And Gordon's Gin for only 169 Namibian dollars and 99 cents. ShopRite Liquor Shop, hot deals at low prices. Alcoholic drinks, not for sale to persons under the age of 18. And just a minute past the hour of 5, we continue. Where was I? The irony the irony, especially when it comes to not the whole Kavango East region, though, because especially for those of us that were following what was going on there, especially when it comes to the water discussion, is that this is how far back I was able to trace, to trace it back. This is just the service provision discussion. It was reported that how do I put this? The Rundu aspect of water debt to the state water service provision, that's NamWater, has been in millions, and I think they're still in their millions. And hang on a second. Yeah, NamWater on the verge of cutting Rundu, Rundu's water. This year. That's because Rundu Town Council is on the verge of facing water cuts after accumulating a debt of 334 million with Namibian Water Corporation. So, this is where I find, there's a little bit of a problem here. What is the problem? Because someone is not doing their job right.
Yeah.
It's either the client that's being, who the service is being dispensed to, or the person dispensing the service. Someone has a lot of explaining to do. I think to some degree, this brings us down to information sharing. What we were laughing about yesterday of giving someone a tape and then asking them a fee so that you can maintain the infrastructure that enabled you to bring the water in their kitchen. And they are looking at you going like, what should I pay? I mean, the river is right there.
Yeah, I don't want to say like our jokes of yesterday, Hamoud, because even though you and I sounded like we were poking holes in the logic of saying, of telling someone to pay for water. No, that was actually on Monday.
Wait, that was on Monday.
That was on Monday.
Yeah.
You know, trying to tell someone or ask someone to pay for just filtering the water, which in many cases, from the, you know, I went to an organic agriculture conference earlier today, Hamoud. And there you've got farmers who can tell you how they reverse, how they practiced or installed reverse osmosis. You know, the filtering system, well, in many cases, in terms of how to treat their own water in many cases.
Mm-hmm.
The discussion that stems from there is, many of those communal farmers can also just go and say, hey, listen, I've also got internet. You know, I can just go and I've also, you know, sort of like, received the latest patch update for my English in terms of, you know, being able to write the right words so that Google can give me the right content and information. And they,
my DIY.
Yeah, they can DIY them themselves there, wherever they find themselves, as long as there's decent internet connectivity. And now you come along here as the regional authority or as the local authority, you know, driving your nice little big truck of water, and you tell people, but the people know that they've been there for 50 years next to the river.
Uh-huh.
And you're now telling them, pay for the water. I'm driving to you.
Yeah, especially those that live in the, you know, like far from the river.
Exactly. I'm driving it now to you,
yeah,
in the scenario. And then many of the people would go like, so what happened to just drilling me a borehole? Why do you need to give me more costs that I did not ask for?
The cost discussion pops up even when it comes to boreholes. Just put in mind that this is a piece of, these are a bunch of parts that are connected together.
Yeah.
So the more you use it, you obviously, you know, wear and tear is something to be expected.
Yeah.
Which is why you need a source of funding so that, as soon as something, okay, for servicing and maintenance, when something breaks, you don't want to just use, you just don't want to use your borehole equipment until it breaks. That's when we are like, well, for the next 2 weeks, we're not going to have water until we contribute money to buy the piece of equipment that broke.
Mm.
You want to collect that money with time so that as soon as it breaks, you can just get it, or maybe just buy one or two spares. When it breaks, you can get someone who is skilled enough to put it all together, so that it can start working again. So that you don't have, you don't have to drive your cattle to the next village for them to access water. So that you don't just have to watch your crops die if you're using it for your irrigation, for example.
Mm.
Now, all these things again requires, I think a lot of explaining.
No, they do.
Yeah.
They actually do.
The person that's coming to service that thing, is not going to do it for free. I know, look, I totally understand the whole thing of, I know one thing about my culture. We grew up in this, in very Ubuntu type of environment where you can go and look after your uncle's cattle without, and if you say it or no, I looked after my uncle's cattle for a week. He didn't pay me. My parents would look at me like, you want your uncle to pay you? But then,
And then I'll even ask you, are you mad?
Yeah, are you crazy? So, but someone's skills.
They'll even ask you, are you mad?
Are you crazy? What are you high? You're supposed to help
each
other.
But, your free labor.
But unfortunately, the life.
We were all there, bro. Don't worry. We were all there.
Unfortunately, the skills acquired at an institution, it's not supposed to work that way.
Mm.
If I'm giving you my skills that I invested a lot of money into acquiring because I had to pay school fees, transport, and basically hustle my way for groceries and accommodations and everything.
Mm.
That was an investment. So I need a return on that investment. That goes beyond, thank you very much. I'll just tell your mother that you are a very good
boy. Here's a glass of water.
Here is a plate of food. You are a very good boy.
But it costs you petrol to get.
Exactly. Like, look.
There's a guy I know. He's
a whole completely different lifestyle.
He's actually the.
It will take a while to get him.
He's the younger brother of my sister's best friend. Now, he's got a catchphrase for, you know, how people treat him because he's a certified mechanic.
Yeah.
Now, he says, people always tell him, quickly come check, quickly. They don't want to say, Helmut, please come and have a detailed look at my car.
Yeah.
In terms of, now he started making a running joke. Now, I won't use use the foul language that he includes in making the joke, but he says he's so sick and tired of getting those kinds of phone calls in there, because he said, yeah, I think I should start calling my business from now on. Quickly come check.
Yeah.
But the punchline doesn't, you know, hit as well in English as it does in Afrikaans, because in Afrikaans, everyone would have been rolling around going like, yeah, no, we understand.
Oh, no, I have a lot of those jokes. But translating them is World War III.
Yeah, exactly. Or actually also loss of income in some cases. But yeah. But it's like you said, Helmut.
Yeah.
You see this particular, I don't want to call it attitude, in terms of how skilled people are treated in the country, specifically in other urban areas or rural areas of the country.
Yeah.
It's a scenario of, you know, you got that skill set.
I know him from way back.
Yeah, or we know you, or we know your mom and your dad, you know, you can't ask a market-related price. Now, the downside is you are literally priced downwards as a professional. I'll ask you now, Helmut. Yeah. Imagine if Namibia had the economy for stand-up comedy that you only find in Windhoek. Now you tried doing the same. If you tried doing the same thing in Rundu, what would happen there specifically? People would say, "Why must we come and pay for you? You're making jokes on a stage."
Yeah. I mean, usually we just do that at home when we're sitting around the fire and everyone laughs, like, why should I pay for it?
Yeah. And people would say, we know we've got someone in our neighborhood or on the farm or in our village.
Yeah. All he just needs is one bottle of beer and he starts giving us the jokes for free.
Now, if it was a scenario of writing stuff or, you know, sharing knowledge and stuff like that, if I did that in Rehoboth, people were like, you know what? What are you doing? Why are you trying now to sort of like be out of sorts? And what I'm illustrating is that when you move out of Windhoek, in terms of economy, culture, and even the kinds of economies that you can try and resuscitate or try to start off from, which are new streams of economies, the downside is you can immediately see what would be some of the issues in other parts of the country. Well, I know what to call it.
Yeah, now, the reason why I went through that detour is because of one point that was pointed out by the governor.
Mm.
And that is the Ministry of International Relations and Trade undertook several important initiatives in the Kavango East region.
Mm.
And one of them was offering offering 445 MSME certifications. They issued those with the intention of formalizing the informal trading. Now, here's the thing. If someone went to a vocational institution, for example, and they trained, they have qualifications that proves that they can fix, certain things like a geyser, for example, your wall socket, for example, and all these things. Now, this, to some degree, forms a part of the informal economy. Now, how do you formalize them? Formalizing them means incorporating them in a way that they can participate to a large scale in the overall Namibian economy. Now, that means they need to be paid for their services.
Helmut, I've actually got a critical question which only hit me right now. A light bulb moment. For example, if you go to City of Windhoek established, what was that market scenario there between Kommersdal and
Huggy Gang of Gambas?
Yeah,
I've seen that.
There's one there, and then apparently there's another market facility in Karatura as well. I just don't know where it is, but in terms of helping to formalize, because you're giving them firstly a piece of land, it would be considered industrial. And, you know, in order to help with things in terms of making things more clustered, which ultimately is the scenario in terms of why the city of Windhoek tries to convince vendors on pavements not to be on the pavement, but rather to trade from that trading space. But here's the thing, Helmut. The other day, I had a discussion with someone based upon where the idea of the modern shopping mall comes from. The modern shopping mall, which I had mentioned to you yesterday, comes from the Middle East. When you and I had the discussion yesterday of, you know, in
Iran having one of the biggest shopping malls.
Yeah, in our Kunene region review. And if you go to Turkey today, you fly to Istanbul and any city in Turkey, even if it's the capital, Ankara.
The best connections and moments are worth remembering, don't you think? Grab one of our great tasting non-alcoholic drinks, Heineken, Savannah, Vintuk Original, or Vintuk Lemon, anytime, anywhere. Easy to connect, easy to enjoy. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Great news. Impa just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today. Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make you...
Welcome back. 16 minutes past the hour of 5. You just tuned in here listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. And as always, we're here until the hour of 6, so we're your drive time show for a reason. So, Ankara, Turkey.
So, the modern idea for the shopping mall comes from the Middle East, specifically Iran, Turkey, and other particular countries, where they've got something known as the bazaar or the souk. The souk and the bazaar has under one location, they centralized all trade. Now, if you can't own a shop, meaning a physical shop in the rest of the city or in the rest of the urban area, you've got this centralized marketplace.
Where you can find
everything.
So for convenience purposes.
Exactly. Now, for 400, 500, 1,000 years even, the same souk, the same bazaar has existed in the same setting there in Turkey, Persia, wherever in the Middle East. My particular concern, the reason why I point that out is, Helmut, because from there you can actually do your town planning or urban planning around an economic activity. For example, the idea of the central business district.
Yeah.
You put that in the middle and then everything else flows from that. However, it has not that logical planning or that planning that method of planning has now obviously been thrown upside down because the Americans came through with this condensation of retail convenience in one spot. They threw that upside down because the central business district, this planning or idea is a European-based idea, meaning all the businesses have their own point of distribution.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has their own point of distribution. Everyone has their own retail space that they command, that they hire, that they rent. But the Americans realized that in the Middle East context, if you want to make urban planning a little bit better, you condense one activity, the retail economic activities, except for like industrial practices. For example, like having an industrial sector in your city that you keep on the outskirts of the city or on the outskirts of the urban area. That particular illustration, Helmut, should be at the forefront of MSME assistance. Because for my understanding, and I'm taking you back to when we had the farmers market discussion earlier in the year, where I cited to you, Helmut, why do we need to go through governments, local authorities, specifically through politicians and their offices? Business people are supposed to innovate, create, innovate and create continuously. It should be a cycle where they need to readjust, realign, readapt, find themselves, start again, go again, reintroduce something new or an updated version of what they're doing.
Yeah.
What is with this emphasis of saying, of as a politician coming out and saying, I help so many business people in my community. But then the Blueberry guys, the 1.5 billion investment close to Divundu.
Yeah.
They were guys that brought an idea to the local authority there and to the regional authority there.
Yeah.
They got their 1.5 billion investment, I think themselves, right? Because it's private sector. It was, it's identified as private sector.
Yeah, it's a private sector.
Investment.
Yeah.
They brought their own, they brought it there themselves. So as a boon, meaning a positive, it should tell people in the community there, hey, if I also have an idea, why do I need to go to the politician in my region? I know that's what people know because that's what they're being told. You can come to us and you can do XYZ particular.
And true, you can.
Yeah, you can do it.
Yeah. But it's not all the time. It's not a one size fits all.
That's the downside. Because here's another thing, Amut. Remember when I mentioned a little bit earlier in the discussion, I came from an organic agricultural conference that happened earlier today. You know, because obviously I wanted to see what was going on there.
Yeah.
There's actually a guy that pulled off agroforestry. The thing that we spoke about last year.
You.
There's actually a guy that pulled it off in your region also. No, sorry. He was in Kavango West. He's in Ngurunguru, so he's not in your region.
Yeah, so he's in your region.
my other favorite region. My adopted region.
Yeah, my adopted region. So I'm gonna.
So, hey, that's you in the English, Hamun. You better leave Angwena alone with the English.
I don't know. I just love that region.
So, the discussions happening there. And here's the thing. There was one guy from Ministry of Agriculture and one guy from Namibia Agronomic Board. The Agronomic Board guy highlighted to the guy that did the agroforestry in Nkurunguru. Not in Nkurunguru. In Kavango West.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, there are offices, facilities, government initiatives or access points he did not know of. He's a German Namibian that moved from Comas on his own, went to go live in the bush there to start up this particular project of his. Took him 2.5 years, 2.5 years. And that's 2.5 years of time before he starts seeing his first harvest ever. It's not like he went there and said, I'm building something. No. Homeboy said he lived there in a tent. So if you guys there in Kavango West know who I'm talking about, you know who I'm talking about, actually. It's, so yeah. But.
Talk about commitment.
But when you look at that, when you look at that impetus, when you look at that dedication or focus, for Holia, I did not know when I started getting into this organic farming discussion that has obviously now been taking place after the invite that I got last year for the first time. And I asked the pivotal question when you and I did that particular conversation also last year about, is there any other template in Namibia of people trying to practice organic farming? And a whole bunch of guys popped up today in that particular engagement that I obviously went to.
That's interesting.
But I don't want to sidetrack our discussion of the Sora for Kavango East. What I want to factor in, Helmut, is look at what people with ideas themselves did.
Yeah.
They did this themselves. They went on the ground. They spoke to local community members there. They asked, could they use this 2 hectares there of communal land in terms of trying to do this exercise of achieving agroforestry? You know, trying to resuscitate depleted soil that was depleted of its nutrients from persistent Mahangu farming. Because the yields started becoming less and less and less because there was less and less and less nutrients in the soil, and the people moved over to the next patch of land right next to where they depleted the nutrients from the soil.
Shifting cultivation.
Yeah, and he asked them, can I use what you guys left behind? And they said, yeah, sure, go for it. Because his motivation was, if he goes to an established farm facility, he says himself he's also a farmer, so I assume from that scenario that he comes from a farming background where he would obviously have exposure to necessary equipment, other particular inputs, and the expertise. And he literally said, I don't want to touch soil that is already nutrient rich. He wanted to see if this thing can help with resuscitating or actually reinvigorating soil that was depleted from other particular crop cultivation mechanisms or methods. What I'm illustrating there is, I don't want to hear, even though I will hear it into perpetuity for the next how many years I'll still be on this planet, but I don't want to hear a governor say, hey, I helped MSMEs here. But then when you go and when you drive to that region now, let's say you go now tomorrow to your region.
Yeah.
Into Rundu, into the other, into Divundu. What's the other urban area? There's another one. Is it just those two? For Kovango East?
Rundu and Divundu?
Yeah.
Urban areas?
Yeah.
In technical definition of urban area, those are the only ones that I know. Yeah, like, I mean, if there are other ones that have been declared, so.
Because he
would be thumb sucking.
He mentioned a whole bunch of schools that got sanitation infrastructure installations in the past year. So I assumed, you know, it sounded like there were a lot more smaller settlements, but they were probably would be
classified as categorized as urban.
That's what I assumed, yeah. But then I realized it was not so. If when you go look at the map, you know.
Yeah, because if someone tells me Kangongo has been classified as urban area, I'm.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch also. There's a whole bunch that were mentioned there. But anyway, getting back to that.
Like, all right, which part?
Getting back to that discussion.
My homies from Kangongo will hunt me down after this.
They'll come and look for your cattle.
And we are neighbors.
They'll come and look for you. The thing that stands out from what the governor cited there was that if you go now into your region and you go look for these MSMEs, where are they? What are they doing?
Yeah.
You know, how vibrant is the commercial atmosphere in the Kavango East region? You sit with two conclusions. It is slowly developing in Divundu and it is very vibrant only in Rundu. And anywhere else, it's as quiet as a night which has no sun, no moonlight in it, no stars flickering down, not even a satellite, you know, accidentally flying across you.
Nada.
Nothing. Then you ask yourself the question, okay, so what were these guys doing? And then you find out it's like small things, for example. It's a community garden over here, it's a community garden over there, which are good. But then, in many cases, they would be considered as, what was that dual thing that was illustrated from the Auditor General's report on for the Ministry of Agriculture? The cross-sectoral influence, but that the ministry's policies do not make mention or even factor in the cross-sectoral influences.
Like, where they intertwine in terms of their duties.
Exactly. Or not just duties, but, you know, when you see as a Minister of Agriculture, you have, you know, nature conservation issues that you will need to deal with, because there's massive, you know, game parks, nature parks, or what's the other reservation parks or stuff like that in the vicinity of the region. You realize you play a dual role as well.
Yeah.
But then you go and say, ah, no, that's Minister of Environment's issue. And then Minister of Environment does the same thing. Ah, you know what? That's Minister of Agriculture's issue.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think the best way to describe that is, it's one thing I really don't like about, especially my generation. Well, our generation and Gen Z's. We run around saying, it's my right. But, we put a lot of emphasis on rights. What we don't like to face is that, rights only work if they come with responsibilities, because then your rights becomes my responsibilities, my rights becomes your responsibilities. It's your right to own a property that you are holding, which is your cell phone. It's then my responsibility not to damage it. Yeah. So but more often we just like to sing rights, but what we just don't, and this is the most important part. What we don't know is that without the responsibility that comes with those rights,
yeah,
there would be no rights. So That basically goes to show that for you to have your rights, I have got to be responsible. For me to have rights, you have got to be responsible. So that's where they now meet, because we don't, you know, you don't exist in a vacuum. I don't exist in a vacuum.
Yeah.
So so I totally understand the Auditor General's description of you know, referring to the ministries or SOEs working in silos. So if the Ministry of Agriculture went bananas, so you know, planting every GMO food and using every every chemical, just because what happens, where these chemicals end up is not their responsibility, because it's the responsibility of the Minister of Environment.
Mm.
That land is going to be tarnished and it won't be agriculture worthy, then we all suffer.
Yeah.
It's time to win your share of 500,000 Namibian dollars in prizes with Windhoek Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Windhoek Beer, SMS the underliner code to 75050, or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So, spot a quote, grab a Windhoek Beer, and you could win. Windhoek, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Ipura nenge no wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo toto ingida. Ashike kapeno nweko tete opoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo. Iho etike kovano ile koshuana. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okupitira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nuneudo, o tukwetira o special ange, tashake ngeje pa omarudi dayo loka, opone ujendi fenawa, nukumona oijabwiri nawa, ninge pata fanona, Monica ko Eagle FM, onore tatuimwe bali heali, nola natu, heali bali no heali, ileko derewa, nora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, oma felane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. 29 minutes left to the hour of 6. If you just tuned in, you are listening to Home Run, and this that is with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM.
Yeah.
So they shared more like the intertwining in responsibilities in order for, the intertwining in responsibilities, because none of us exist in a vacuum. But there's something coming back to the MSME example that I used earlier. There's one part that I think you were not here, you were on leave at the time when I was talking about the standing committee report, National Assembly report.
Yeah.
Yeah, on the formalization, on the informal set, of informal trading.
Yeah.
A lot of, the question I think that just popped up in my head with regards to the formalization of informal, of the informal economy is that, the most example that's more often used in, even in this report, in reference to what is what's being described as informal economy, is informal trading, as in mostly agricultural produce or maybe retail products like clothes or secondhand or whatever that, order with me guys and stuff like that.
Mm.
But the skills-based economy, like servicing of your microwaves, your fridges, and your wall sockets and stuff, it's barely, if ever, factored in. But now, if you and I have a certain, set of skills, and throw in your hair salons, throw in your barbers, for example, these guys are rarely mentioned, or is it because of the small scale one?
They are rarely mentioned, Helmut.
Or it's because they are small scale, or they don't make part of the informal economy.
It's them and the people that work with the textile guys, the people that can make new clothes and fix your clothes.
Yeah, you have a lot of guys fixing your shoes.
Yeah,
just somewhere in Van Hill, somewhere.
And a business.
Hmm?
Are you talking about the business?
The guys that will just fix your old torn shoes.
Yeah,
yeah.
The business, yeah. But that's a formalized business.
You have someone who is practicing it, and they want to formalize it.
Yeah.
Because by the way, I can do that.
Yeah, I know you could probably be a cobbler, Helmut. You could also probably be, you know, be a new age dictator. We all have talents, don't worry.
I think I'd be very good. I think I'll make her, you know.
Don't become a Henry VIII.
No. I love women. I can't go around executing them. I'll just go for something divorce, for example.
I realized something about that guy's personality on my way here to the office.
Henry VIII?
Yeah.
You're thinking about Henry VIII on your
No, because do you know what's the weirdest thing?
Yeah.
At that moment, I was trying to, because since I'm always watching things in terms of what's happening out there in the world and seeing if there's any influences that would impact Namibia and South Africa and SADC, I came to a very split second conclusion, it's a curiosity element in terms of why are the British so fixated on one of their monarchs, which you can technically view as probably one of their most craziest monarchs that they ever had. I'm using the word crazy as a softening term, because I did not know the man personally. I didn't live 800 years ago.
Yeah.
The downside is when you see that when you look at his habit, as what has been recorded by historians, he wanted to divorce and marry for 8 times.
Yeah.
But the first 7 women before number 8 either were executed or they were sort of like locked up, thrown in jail and forgotten there. And the child is living there a free life while the child's mother is in jail, or the child's mother had been executed.
His child was jailed, Queen Elizabeth I.
I know.
Like the father of the year, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
I think that was at age 12. Are you high?
I know, Helmut. And I know it's sort of like diverting our discussion into something else completely different.
Very crazy. But now the crazy part is true, because this is someone that decided to start his own church because the Pope would not give him.
Yeah, because the Pope said, no, you may not
you,
divorce.
You can't divorce. Yeah. And then he didn't exercise what he started.
Yeah.
So now leaving the crazy European monarchs for you know just because
behind behind
the report that I'm referencing which came out of the National Assembly 7th Parliament, a standing committee, you know, the previous parliament. This is a standing committee on economic and public administration, and the report is based on a motion titled "In View of Helping Informal Traders" that the National Assembly discuss social protection. And this is about a 20 page report, but just in the introduction, skip all the top part, they just go to letter A. Implementation of the International Labour Organization recommendation R204 2015, because in 2015 there was an organization, the International Labour Organization had a discussion in Geneva, which was held in Geneva, Switzerland, where they basically recommended sort of all the member states of the organization to work towards formalizing their informal markets.
Yeah.
So that they can contribute overall to the country's, to the country's economy. Because, when you look at it, one thing that you look at is there are more like specific disciplines that are mentioned there. One was street vendors, domestic workers, wood crafters, so wood carvers are also, included in there. Then, men on the side of the road, the cattle herders, etc. Now, etc. I figured if someone then went to school and did plumbing, for example, and they want to exercise their skills, because you'll always have a clogged pipe or, in the kitchen or your bathroom, and you're going to need these skills because we want to solve a housing problem. And if you look at the houses that we want to build are the ones that have the plumbing system. So, if we are going to cry about having the type of houses that we find in quote unquote a formalized environments or formalized formal physical infrastructures, when you look at it like that, that means the more houses we build, the more plumbers we're going to need, the more electricians we are going to need. So, are these guys not included in the MSME discussion? Because if they are not, we're about to have a bunch of clogged pipes and with no one to fix them.
Do you know also why, Helmut, I have this slight aspect of annoyance?
Yeah.
Is because of the, you know, obviously it makes it for the governor and for his officers. It will be a scenario of telling back to, let's say, the National Planning Commission here in Windhoek, look, this is how many particular potential entrepreneurs and business people we empowered.
Yeah.
You know, the one was obviously the certifications, remember?
Yeah, the 445 certifications.
Yeah. I don't want to get to the micro lending because the one.
Eesh.
You know, I sat there going like, hey, what? What? Okay, yeah, look, I've also been a staunch orator, meaning I've just been speaking about it. A staunch indicator that, you know, you need to find ways of making money flow more in Namibia.
Yeah.
But every time when you, okay, once again, the youth credit grant scheme was also referenced.
Mm-hmm.
But once again, that just shows to youth, because remember at the start of the discussion when the two men that were interviewed.
Oh yeah, that
the older guy that's like you said, he's a baby boomer. It brings me back right squarely to a hypothesis I have developed, Helmut, since last month, actually since June, because one of my siblings and I, we had this discussion regarding this. Helmut, there is a massive gap between the baby boomers in understanding the needs of the contemporary society and the demands that the Gen Zs, the Gen Zs and millennials, because you and I, we are in the millennials.
Yeah.
And we've got the Gen Zs behind us. So we learn a lot from each other, but we, the Gen Z, the millennials have learned from the Gen Xers, and they were the first liberal guys. They were the guys after the boomers.
Yeah.
They liberalized things from the 70s and the 60s. They were the guys that spoke of, you know, that had the revolutions going and stuff like that, because they were asking questions in terms of, why must I go to war?
Yeah.
Why do I need to listen to a politician who potentially could be telling me just a whole bunch of tuna fish, you know, in terms of explainers? And these are all sent logical questions to ask.
Yeah.
And they were the ones that emphasized on rights, the right to have access to sanitation, the right to have access to housing, the right to have access, you know, to decent living standards and stuff like that, which obviously puts pressure on a politician from a previous generation.
Yep.
Because remember, it makes things difficult. However, if you come into 2025, now at the start of the discussion, which I did not hear during the presentation of the governor, was a question of, how do you bring in new industries into the region and not just focus on agriculture? Do you know what was also surprising? Not to hear anything about tourism, not to hear anything about nature conservation, not to hear anything about renewable energy, green energy.
You know,
zero, Helmut. I'm just hearing about backyard gardens, farming.
You know why, you know, now you know why I'm fixated on the skill type and formalization thereof.
Yeah.
Apart from, you know, mocking our traditional way of doing things of, you know, I feel like even if you went to, you know, if we just look at it from a Ubuntu Pan-Africanism, you know, perspective.
Yeah.
You are going to use your hard-end skills with your hard-end equipments to fix someone's plumbing system, and they'd be like, thank you very much, I know your mom, thank you, now have a good day. Now, but that's not how things are supposed to work.
Yeah.
They, now, if that person have registered their skills to, and they want, you know, they have registered their, you know, their practice as a, you know, as a business, they have a lot of, you know, they have a lot of fees to pay. They have a lot of levies to pay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, mm-hmm. Namra is not going to say, well, you helped your mom's friends, so we're just going to give you a waiver. No.
And Namra will tell you, where are the invoices for that, for the unpaid labor?
Yeah.
Unpaid labor. And then you say, I don't have invoice. So we must just use breath here.
Yeah. Well, she just said and tapped me on the shoulder. But that's not how it's supposed
and
to
be. Gave me a plate of food.
Yeah. It was delicious though. But thank you very much. But yeah, we are going to need a record keeping and all these things. Again, it's what you get for adopting a foreign concept. We're going to have to deal with it.
Mm.
Now, I feel like, one of the biggest problems is we are still in the transition period. Mm. Whether it's someone that fixes electronics or someone that fixes your plumbing system or someone that fixes your leaking roof.
Yeah.
They went to school to study to basically learn how to do these things. Now, they invested in it. So it goes beyond saying thank you. Now, if we are going, now that is the reason why I was so fixated on the SME, on the MSME, because I kept coming back to what you keep pointing out, that do we want an agricultural-based economy or an industrial-based economy?
I would have loved
to. Or do we want to have both? Because that will take a lot of balancing of a seesaw.
I would have loved to be there and in that governor's presentation just now.
Well, didn't they just say, from the councillor guys, they are the priorities in terms of
the MCs,
asking questions.
The MCs, put it on black and white, please. And then after the governor's done, after, meaning like tomorrow, working day, submitted there.
That's when I went like, okay, hang on, say what?
No question. And I even wanted to ask that particular question earlier today. Because here's the thing, Helmut. It's lovely hearing the poetry about how to try and firstly protect the environment, try to achieve food security, try to assist up and coming or emerging crop farmers and community gardens with nice initiatives that obviously they are labor intensive. But then the first thing I go and think about is, Namibia has an industrial policy. The industrial policy wants people in the urban areas to potentially start industries there. The industries should not be there right next to where you are in the bush somewhere, because Nampower hasn't pulled a electricity cable there to you specifically, even though you've got the sun now.
Look, Nampower will have to be very nice to take electricity to. Okay, now today you are here, and then they'll be like, okay, we'll just give you a switch box here. And then 2 weeks later, I'm like, okay, you know what? I want to move that side of Dagbreek. So Nampower,
come.
Yeah, so which is why centralization, not centralization in terms of national centralization, regional, is really needed. Like if I'm going to electrify a certain, take for example, a certain village, I want a lot of, everyone will basically want you in close proximity so that they don't have to, it's a lot of investment to electrify people, or not just electrify, to give services to people that are scattered.
Yeah, it is.
That's a lot of investment.
That is a lot of investment.
That's a fancy way of saying it's expensive and we don't have the money.
Yeah.
Even if we had the money, that would be a lot of waste.
Not actually, Helmut, because do you know who always gives me inspiration of looking at how did you reach this?
Who is that?
Countries like China, even countries like Australia, even rural parts of Japan, even India. Because I'm not going to look at anything in Africa, even South Africa and even Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
You will find small villages, they've got electricity. How do they achieve it? They ensured that there is some sort of an aspect in terms of tell people. They realized that there's a bunch of people living there together.
Yeah.
They've built structures which look like their homes and stuff. And now you see this community there.
Yeah.
Then in all of these countries that I'm mentioning to you, which also includes most of Europe, is that they realized go and tar a road or something, or formalize
that goes to that village.
Yeah, formalize the transport infrastructure leading to that small settlement. That way you know that there's something there. If you go anywhere in Namibia on the highway, you just see a whole bunch of gravel roads.
Oh, yeah, that are branching off from there.
But you don't know where they go. You are afraid of accidentally turning off and telling your girlfriend, hey, let's Let's make a wrong turn.
Oh man, that's a terrible example.
And she'll tell you don't reference a horror movie. But in essence, Helmut, the examples that I'm highlighting to you now is one that speaks to literally what Hambiuka kept on saying, because Hambiuka's whole report card was just infrastructure
development.
From health to education to everything else, it was just infrastructure and skills development.
In every region, infrastructure development, every governor is going to say that.
Yeah. Even though I said at the start of our discussion, you could see the differences in what their needs on the ground was.
Yeah.
For example, between Kunene and Omaheke versus today,
yeah,
was three completely different things. These, in Kavango East, it started from a notion in terms of we need sanitation, upgrading of sanitation facilities at education facilities.
Yeah.
And so many people are needed here in the health sector. So many particular developments have taken place in the health sector. XYZ, XYZ. Do you know what is fascinating to find out? There's a gap of 500 police needed in Kavango East.
Yeah.
Kavango East is supposed to have to run on 1,300 police officers. You know, for safety and security.
Mm-hmm.
They've only got 800 plus.
Yeah.
And that the most common criminal act is asset forfeiture through that of forced engagement with the asset forfeiture department.
Yeah, those guys are terrible at negotiating. But
I don't think their aim was ever to negotiate.
It was
more of a convincing argument that they made through fists, you know, or just through a show of force.
Yeah, we are getting it, come hell or high waters.
Don't worry, my guy. Mm-hmm. Just relinquish all control.
You will buy a new one.
We know you've got a job. Just let it go.
Well, you call them Tura boy back home, you know, back in Rune, we call them, you know, Taranawa, which literally translates to look carefully. It's even funnier when you translate it to English.
You see how dumb English is.
I know.
Everything sounds better in your mother tongue. When you translate it to English,
it sounds ridiculous.
Man, what's with this? What's with this Barbie Land, you know, Disney World translation?
So for me, it's one of those, one of those dilemmas of, what direction are we actually taking as a country? Not just, not just as a region. In this case, Kavango East region, in this case. One thing that you also see, which was pointed out, earlier on in the interview of those two gentlemen.
Mm.
And, this team just starts, in the middle of nowhere, and you don't get a chance to get who is who.
No, yeah. We did not.
Yeah. So one thing that was also pointed out was, how whether we're looking at development from a regional level or on a national level or constituents level, what is obvious is that it's going to take everyone's participation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not the president alone.
And everyone will be impacted.
Yeah, everyone will be impacted. So, yeah. So that's actually one thing that I think we don't seem to understand. That if not everyone participates, then everyone is going to be, to some degree, going to be impacted by the inactivity that's going to come from our lack of participation.
Mm.
Now, to participate, that's where now the repetition, or more like the national, what's going to slowly become a national anthem, is, we keep going back to the same, to the same talking point in terms of looking at what needs to be done.
Mm.
For one to participate, they must know what's going on. For them to know what's going on, they need to be informed.
Mm.
That's where communication comes in. Are we communicating? You have the boomer saying, "Well, the millennials and Gen Zs are too irresponsible to hold any form of public responsibility." And then you have the bunch of of millennials. So, but although millennials, on the other hand, we should really get out of that bracket of not knowing what's going on in your region, because that's just painful. And
I have a theory for that.
What's that?
For that millennials not caring or having a sort of like an indifference towards what's actually happening in terms of current affairs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I see it even like resonating in like my age bracket.
Yeah, I see that in mine too.
Where if they are comfy and comfortable enough, it's like they're walking, you know, those blinders that you put on a horse or on a donkey.
On the side, so they don't see what's going on the side.
On the side, yeah.
It's just a literal narrow view.
They literally have that tunnel vision. They literally have that tunnel vision. And if you look at the activism, the rate of activism under the Gen Zs,
mm-hmm.
it's sort of like telling us now, the millennials and the Gen X ahead of us, things can't be business as usual. Now, the baby boomers are responding this by telling us now here in national policy with the NDP6, it's not business as usual.
Yeah.
Because the youth, which are the Gen Zs and the Gen Alphas, and who's the other one? There's a
beta one, I think.
There's a beta, yeah, behind them. Those guys are shouting from that end, it should not be business as usual.
Yeah.
Now, we are stuck in the middle, us the millennials and the Gen Xers, because we were shown a picture of just continue as you are. Just go on as you are. We try to explain to people every day on the radio, since we are millennials,
mm-hmm.
Why property prices are out of control, or why certain economic factors don't speak to anything conducive, because you can literally see there's either just 500,000 people that are responsible for making the money move in your account, in your economy, out of 3 million people.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other end, not everyone can participate in various aspects of the economy. And the Gen Zs and the Gen Alphas and the Gen Betas are already telling you, yeah, if you have a kid that was born yesterday, that kid 5 years from now will tell you to pull up your socks for no reason.
Now, speaking of pulling up your socks,
yeah.
Now let's get to one discussion that I think we are not addressing. I haven't heard it in all the, this is like the third state of the region address that we're talking about.
Mm.
This is the third one. And what I haven't heard is, unemployment.
Mm.
And skills acquisition in terms of in terms of studying, what someone decides to go and study,
yeah.
Is that and now you and I have been through this like 1,000 times, and that is can we just there's an elephant in the room that we are not addressing in terms of every time that kids are leaving high institutions, are leaving secondary schools to go to high institutions, the elephant in the room we are not addressing is are we telling them which markets are saturated? Because until we address that address, we'll need a lot of clothes. Until we address that, we're gonna need a lot of clothes.
English is really sidestepping us.
I know. Yeah. Until we address that elephant in the room,
yeah.
We are going to be talking about unemployment, and every time that we'll be talking about unemployment, someone is leaving high school, joining tertiary institutions to study the very exact same courses that are saturated and that are, a large portion of unemployed youth.
Yeah.
We don't want to address that, do we?
Nope.
Because we are afraid how high institutions are going to respond. Because you are talking about an entire department that will look at you and go like, then what are we going to do?
Yeah. We were making money from this. Yeah. Uh-huh. NASFAF was paying. Yes.
Yep.
We got this bunch of students in our department. But we don't know if they will find a job in the economy.
Yeah. But at least we have a job.
We can prove through industry representation. Each department must, at my alma mater,
yeah.
NAST,
yeah.
They've got most, a senate. So if you've got a course,
mm-hmm.
there's a senate that meets every 3 years or every 5 years,
yeah.
to see whether or not the course is still feasible in terms of skills.
Should we continue it or not?
Yeah. In, and providing a service to the economy.
Yeah.
And yeah, the university will tell you, no, we can show there are industry representatives here. They give insights and inputs into the course. And then the student will tell you, or the graduate will tell you, but brah, there's nothing.
Like, look, this is, I think this is the headache that, everyone, you know, from the president, especially, the president, especially in the ministry of, you know, the super ministry, Ministry of Education, is now, you know, struggling with.
Mm.
Yeah, because, look, I don't want to sit and assume that they are, you know, they are dumb, that they don't see this elephant in the room. They are smart. They can obviously see this dilemma.
Yeah.
I think the biggest challenge they are having to face is, what do we do with it? Because again, it's very easy to say, one of the reasons why we have a lot of high unemployment in this, you know, especially in this field of study is graduates, is because there are a lot of, you know, we have a lot of graduates and they keep graduating every year.
Mm.
And therefore, but now, we don't have, you know, a big enough market to absorb them at the rate that they are being produced. Therefore, let's either dial it down,
yeah,
or let's put a pause on it.
Yeah.
And a lot of people that are in that line of work will be like, what are we going to do?
Heineken's iconic balanced taste that gives you that refreshing first only made possible by Heineken's 5-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
The Villager, wherever you are, welcome back. The time is just 6 o'clock on the dot, and we have, thank heavens we have come to the end of our show for today without, I'm the only one that did a little bit of making fun of my own region, but that was actually just pointing out the reality on the ground. So, so look, every time that you steal something that's intended for public use, don't complain about corruption because, well, same thing. Corruption is the misuse of public funds for personal gain, and stealing a pump or taking copper wires from somewhere that is intended for everyone's use, just the same thing.
Mm.
Now, the question here is the question here, I think, development wise for us is. I think also another question that we are not addressing here is, are we going the agricultural route? Are we going the industrial route? Or we are going to do both?
Or are we going to go and formalize living spaces, for example, settlements?
Yeah.
And if you know that the people work at that agricultural plantation,
yeah,
that they at least can know when they come back home that there's some sort of a formalization.
I think it was you that used that gave an example of for some municipalities or local authorities in South Africa that have this ballooning debt because
It's the ones where the Bantustans.
Because they are being given services they can't afford.
Yeah, it's there where the proposed Bantustans under apartheid would have been.
Yeah,
it's exactly those municipalities. Because when South Africa now formally became free and now everyone has now the same rights and the same liberties post-independence, post-1994, now you go install municipal services there and the municipality is established there.
Like, okay, here's the water, here's the electricity, but
there's a bunch of people now.
You have to pay.
But now you must pay. Now that territory, pre-independence, was under a traditional authority. And people understood under a traditional authority, I didn't have to pay for anything because my dad didn't pay for the thing. My granddad didn't pay for the thing. My granddad's granddad didn't pay for the thing. It's our example about the water and the truck.
Yeah.
And where we said, yeah, but I can see the river from here. Why are you driving water to me?
I didn't ask.
I really didn't ask for your water. Mm-hmm. And literally it's that particular scenario, Amut. It's literally that thing.
Yeah.
Development. It's what do they call that thing in construction? The finishings. You know, when you round out the thing. You know, you can build the wall, but now you've got to plaster and paint the wall.
Yeah.
And when you plaster and paint, what are you going to put at the bottom where you've got these skirtings in our studio? You know? What are you going to put there at the bottom?
Yeah.
To just make the wall slightly more
smooth and...
No, not smooth, but it's more... Just add a different feature to the wall. Nothing. You don't know how to do that small transition from building the thing, making the thing, making it look okay-ish, and then just putting a finishing touch on it. Which sounds technically artistic in a way.
The biggest challenge to basically every developmental planning is the money. It's very easy to come up with the plans. We have seen that with, silencing the guns in 2021, the African Union. The thing is, the execution of everything is going to need money.
Mm.
Yeah. Which is why I kept pointing out that, more than in the very same way that, the people that sell, agricultural produce like tomatoes, potatoes, and onions and stuff. For them to continue selling you these products, you have to buy them so that they can use some of the money that you are giving them to go back to the person that's farming it to buy again, so that that person that's farming can use some of that money to buy some seeds and pay for their water bills and everything that they need to keep producing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a supply chain. It's a whole supply chain that you're looking at. Now, if you just keep taking the agricultural produce from this vendor for free, guess what? They won't have any money to go and, to go and buy new agricultural produce for them to keep supplying you. And therefore, the person that has a backyard garden, they are not going to have anyone buying their stuff.
Yeah.
And if it's rotting, they don't have money to go and buy everything that they need from the shop for them to continue, for them to sustain their backyard garden. So you see that, it's caused some type of domino effect. So I think, in a similar way, skills are basically just the same.
Mm.
Now, as a plumber, I need a water pump plier for me to, for me to fix your tap. Yeah, I need all these equipments for me to fix your tap. Now, no hardware will give me these equipments for free.
Yeah.
So if you are not paying for my services, it's very hard for me to keep going. Now, with all due respect to your culinary genius, thank you very much for the food. But what I need
is money.
Is money.
Cash flow.
Yeah, look, if you can convince the hardware to accept your food as a medium of exchange for them to give me the equipment that I need, that'd be brilliant. Except everyone at the counter will look at you go like, that looks like very delicious meat, but here's the thing. The way things work here is that I need something that I can bank. Yeah, now last time I checked, banks don't just, put food in your bank account.
They don't allow for deposits of food into your bank account.
Which ATM allows a food deposit? Basically,
and food withdrawal.
A food withdrawal. That'd be nice. But, okay, we really have to go.
Sorry for that, guys. I'm about to talk about food at 7 minutes past six.
7 minutes past the hour of six. And that was sum up of the 2 hours plus. Wait, that was an hour plus.
It was an hour, almost 2 hours.
Yeah, almost 2 hours, 30-something minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, of the Kavango state of the region address. It's, it's my region, my favorite region. It was nice to see that a traditional authority chief decided to actually, king. Before I get, excommunicated from the region, he is one of those persons that attended the event in absentia.
Not even proxy.
In absentia.
We won't ask him, but don't worry.
Don't ask. I don't have
Before you also get, like you said, excommunicated from the region.
One guy who is actually, you know, a close relative of the, you know, a close relative of the man, works, you know, he's a very good friend of mine, works for NWR. So he will be the first one who will just hijack me in Zupac and punch me in the face. Because it'd be very...
In Zupac?
You know.
Over here?
Yeah.
So the guy's already living here?
Yeah, the office is very close to that area.
Yeah.
Yeah, he would just, you know, be there like, you're talking about my grandfather, right?
Yeah. Helmut, you're by yourself, bro. I'm sorry. You're on your own with that one.
So 9 minutes past the hour of six, that brings us to the end of our show for today. For me, until tomorrow, same time, same place on your favorite radio station. You all have a good one.
Same time, same year, dear listeners. Same time, same place tomorrow. Enjoy the rest of your program in our company. And we'll see each other again.
Speaking of same time, same place, for today, I mean that literally same time, same place. For tomorrow, same time, same place again. And hence, Mind the Gap will only be, on weekends and to be announced as to exactly which weekend of, which day of the weekend. So, I'll keep you posted.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you...
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.